south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, let's polish off some email questions first. This is from Elena. In Spanish, they say Elena. She says, una pregunta sin piedras. That means that she's going to ask me a question and not throw rocks at me this time. Why she say that? Well, not so long ago, if you remember, she's the one that did write an email and threw a few rocks at me. Anyway, she says, saludos, Johnny. You have suggested that your gringos eventually obtain citizenship in whatever country they have chosen. Indeed, there are advantages, but is it legal to have dual citizenship? I know many people who say they have dual citizenship. Is it a matter of not letting the left hand know what the right hand is doing? Do you know people who have had problems by having dual citizenship? I mean, if a Mexican-American, for example, travels to Mexico with a Mexican passport and returns with an American passport to the USA, could it not be a problem that his or her passport is not noted with his or her entrance into Mexico? I say Mexico, but it could apply to almost any country. And then she pauses and starts a new paragraph and says, oh, no puedo resistir, which means I can't resist. Aquí va la piedra. That means here comes the stone that she's going to throw. All right, she says, Johnny, gringos have no right complaining about undocumented aliens in the U.S. She means, of course, illegal aliens who have committed a crime just by going into the United States, because it is a crime, you know. That's a good way to start off your relationship with a new country, huh? Just want to straighten that out. I'm never going to let anyone get away with saying undocumented aliens. It's always illegal aliens. Let's stick to the facts now. We might even go so far as to say criminal illegal aliens. Just by the fact that they're in the U.S. illegally, they've committed a crime. But we'll be nice. Let's not quibble. After all, you remember that book written by, I think it was a California state judge called Three Felonies a Day? Meaning in the eyes of the incomprehensible U.S. legal system, we're all criminals. Anyway, then Elena says in her email, there are thousands of gringo illegal aliens in Iraq and other countries, and no one seems to have invited them. Elena, Johnny here again. So, Elena, you're saying gringos can be illegal aliens in Iraq and other places? Yet you always refer to illegal Mexicans as undocumented persons? Don't quite get that. Then she concludes the email saying, ciao, Johnny, Elena. All right, since she promised not to throw a rock, but she did anyway, allow me to hit that rock back into her court. You ready, Elena? Here goes. Yes, she's right. There are lots of illegal gringos in Iraq and other countries. But number one, they all came in legally at first. You know, they had legal visas and some then overstayed. But surely a tiny percentage, less than maybe 1 in 1,000. But still, the ones that did are technically illegal aliens, right? I'll go with that. But there's another very important thing, or two, or three, you have to remember. First of all, gringos almost always have something very positive to offer when they move to another country. They have much higher levels of education than the local population. They have dough, or they want to be able to qualify for the visa in the first place. They have initiative. They start businesses and hire locals. They bring first world middle class values, higher standards, and much higher levels of cleanliness, order, hygiene, and sanitation. As compared to, let's just use those two places Elena mentioned, Mexico and Iraq. Now, if you think I'm being a jerk, this is hyperbole, and I'm blowing things out of proportion, you ought to just fly into Mexico City or Iraq, hail a taxi, and ask him to take you on a tour of a middle-class neighborhood. You'll see in an instant that it's on par with trailer trash or low-income public housing up in the States. And those are exactly the norms, values, and customs that uneducated or undereducated Latins bring to the States with them. So again, gringos land in foreign countries legally with proper visas. And of course, if they overstay their visas, they are illegal. Certainly, none of us wants to be in that position. And when we're in it, we feel awful uncomfortable about it till we straighten it out and pay the fine or whatever. So yes, there are certain gringos, especially low-budget backpacker types, trekking through jungles in the mountainside. They lose track of time or are having such a good time that they overstay their visas by a day, a week, even sometimes a couple months. Sure, there's some of that, but no one sets out to do that intentionally. That's another thing. Gringos, especially older adult gringos, were brought up by the strict rule of law. That means obeying zoning rules, traffic laws, paying taxes, etc. And unlike most of the Latin population, gringos, unless they were on the lam from the law, wouldn't think of moving to another country with the intent of letting their visa run out and remaining there indefinitely as an illegal. In fact, I'd say for 99.99% of all the gringos I've ever met, that would be an unthinkable proposition. So in my 27 years down here, I've met thousands of gringos, and I think I've met four, maybe five, who I know are illegal aliens in their chosen Latin country. And they seem to have followed the same path, mostly gentrified hippies who kind of dropped out, came through legally many years ago on a tourist visa, liked it so much they never left, got married to a local, gone native, let their paperwork slide, some for years and years. And you know, they could straighten it all out with a lawyer, a little money, and running around to a lot of different government departments, but they really don't seem to want to. No one from the government bugs them. They don't advertise it, of course, and they're pretty much confined to living out their lives in a small town in the boonies. Even so, that seems totally all right with them. In fact, they all seem genuinely happy. The problem, of course, is that they can't travel outside their chosen Latin country's borders. That would be difficult without the proper up-to-date visas, but not impossible. This is Latin America, you know. By the way, about a month ago, I was going through a scruffy Latin land border, and I watched as a backpacking gringo in front of me was having an argument with the immigration guy. Seems his paperwork wasn't right. Yep, he overstayed his visa by quite a few months, turns out. The immigration guy told him he'd have to go back to Managua to get another passport stamp. Meanwhile, they had a quiet little discussion, and I watched as the immigration guy passed the backpacker a little piece of paper. It said $100 on it. That was his way of telling the backpacker guy that he didn't have to go to Managua at all. He just needed to pay him $100 and he could go right through. Well, the backpacker ponied up because that little mission back to Managua would have surely taken him two or more days because he'd have to stand in government lines too. And Managua was at least 150 miles away. Welcome to Latin America, huh? Yet I think the guy could have worked him down to 50, maybe even $25 had he known some Spanish. So yes, there's a tiny, tiny fraction of gringos who are illegal aliens in Latin America. They're no burden at all on the Latin country they're in. They're not sucking off the welfare system or the safety net because that kind of stuff doesn't exist here in Latin America. By the way, as mentioned in past shows, if you overstay your visa, you're charged a dollar or two a day, and Latin officials are ever so glad to accept that payment with a smile. And no matter how many times that happens, once you pay that fine, you're back in the good graces of your Latin country. Oh, and here's something I'm sure you didn't know. If you're crossing a land border and have overstayed your visa and have to pay that fine, you can actually negotiate with them. Suppose it's $50. You can say, well, I'll give you 20, and they'll say 25, and there you are. But that won't happen if you're flying out from an international airport because things are computerized and they've got their set rates. Yes, it's happened to me. I've been an illegal alien a couple of times. Bottom line, whether you're in a Latin country legally or have overstayed your visa a bit, you have positive value and you're an asset to that third world country. By the way, it breaks down that the average gringo tourist or gringo living in Latin America has a bachelor's degree from a U.S. university. Now let's contrast that to an illegal Latin coming into the States. On average, they're broke, have no safety net, they have a 6th or 8th grade education, they're more than happy to work a grunt job for cash, doing drywall, gardening, or even a maid. For them, the whole idea is to blend in, not get caught, get a job, and send part of that money home each month to their Latin families. So let me ask you this. How many gringos and expats living in Latin America are working a job and sending that money back to the folks in Montreal, Tucson, and Cleveland? Now, it's a fact, you know, that remises only go from north to south, never from south to north. I found that out when I wanted to send some money to my brother up in the States, Western Union, from down here in Latin America. And I wanted to do it anonymously, like Latins up in the States do when they send remisas back home because, you know, no one wants to put their real name and address on a remisa. That's a record and it leaves trails. And someday, if the U.S. ever tightened up, they could then find out who the illegals are, right? Hey, now, isn't that a good idea? What if U.S. Immigration Service, ICE, posted a man at every Western Union and MoneyGram office up in the States? Boy, wouldn't that kill the remisa business in a hurry. But nope, that's too logical. Beyond the capacity of those brain-dead slugs in Washington. So anyway, I didn't want to wire transfer $145 to my brother in Chicago because the wire transfer fee is like $30 to $50. That'd be stupid. And if you send a check, It takes a month to clear. So I went to a Western Union window in a big city in Latin America. Man, they're everywhere. Western Union is very smart. They've negotiated with a lot of small businesses to have a window right in a drugstore, hardware store, whatever. So I went up to one of those windows situated in a supermarket. I said to the lady, I'd like to send $145 to my brother in Chicago. She looked at me like I was nuts. She said, you want to send money to Los Estados, the states? Never done that before. She said, it doesn't work that way. MoneyGrams come from the states to Latin America. Then I said, what about the main office, which wasn't so far away? She said, maybe. I went there. Same thing. They said it was a one-way cash flow from up north to Latin America. So how do you explain that? In fact, I was reading just the other day, in Mexico alone, fully a quarter of the country's entire GDP is floated by remises coming from the states. Yet they won't let me send $140 in the other direction. Oh, and by the way, the MoneyGram remisa business is so huge now that Walmart has gotten into the act. Yeah, now you can go to a Walmart up in the States and send your remises to any Walmart in the chain in Latin America. And you know, they've got over 3,000 Walmarts down here, which makes it Latin America's biggest legit employer. Just go on the Walmart website and you'll see they have a money transfer service and you can transfer, get this now, up to $2,999 online or in person every 30 calendar days. And it really looks to have been set up in such a way to collect remises from illegal aliens in the States. I know some of you are thinking, Johnny, how can you say that? How can you jump to such conclusions? Well, listen to this. In the frequently answered questions section, by the way, you can get it in Spanish or English, it says, what payment methods can I use when sending money at a Walmart or MoneyGram agent location? Answer, in most cases, cash is the only form of payment accepted. And to make it even easier for illegal to send money, it says, if your receiver of the money does not have a valid photo ID, then you can go to a Walmart or MoneyGram agent location to send them money. In other words, it's inviting people who don't have a legitimate or valid photo ID to come and pick up their money anyway. It's as easy as that. You send cash in the States, the receiver in Latin America gets cash. No IDs required. Now, you know, up in the States, banks and businesses are very much discouraging the use of cash. But not Western Union, Walmart, and MoneyGram. They transfer tens of millions of dollars in cash from the States to Latin America every week. Now, if you and I wanted to transfer cash money around up in the States, have you tried that lately? Yep, you're instantly under suspicion, and it's 20 question time. Man, am I glad I voted with my feet. But I digress as usual. Anyway, if there's one thing us gringos and expats can feel very good about, is that we always seem to bring higher standards and improve the living conditions for people around us here in the third world. Unfortunately, it's just the opposite when third world people move to the first world. It's all about people bringing their habits and their cultures with them. And why do undereducated third world people want to move to the States? Because they want what the first world offers as they believe it to be from watching our movies and programs on cable TV. Which is why Latins think we're nuts for wanting to come down to a place that they're dying to leave. And you know, it's impossible to explain to a Latin person that the United States is not what it was. It's not the place we grew up in. So who to blame? Big Brother, high taxes, corrupt politicians, Big Pharma, the military-industrial complex? Well, all of that. And of course, the estimated 30 to 40 million illegal aliens. Now, if you think I'm stretching the point about the illegal alien bit, take a little trip to the Latin Mecca, Miami, where there are whole subdivisions, neighborhoods, and districts where if you only speak English, you won't even be able to order dinner. Talk about strangers in a strange land. And how about that Latin American baby boom? One thing you'll notice if you're down here in Latin America for any length of time and you're off the gringo tourist trail, you'll see many, many very young girls holding little babies. Those would be the mothers of those little babies, not the sisters or aunts. Nope, it's not unusual for 17, 16, 14, even 12-year-old girls to have babies here in Latin America. You know how it is up in the States. If there's a 12 or 13 or 14-year-old girl having a baby, you just might see an expose in the papers or on the 6 o'clock news. But not down here in Latin America. Though it is true, the more educated a society, the smaller the family and the older the mother is when she first starts having kids. Down here, there are multiple causes for teenage and sub-teenage pregnancies. Not the least of which is that scientists have now proven that the Latin male population has a much higher level of testosterone than similar aged males up in the first world, sometimes double. And it's not that these guys produce more testosterone naturally. It's that up in the first world, all the junk food, additives, pesticides, plastics, and many of the containers in contact with food happen to be estrogen analogs. So in young American males, there's a shortage of testosterone and an excess of female hormone analogs, which can only mean very good news for the opera crowd. And talking about how people who move to other countries bring their cultures and habits with them, listen to this. Did you know that 19 of the 32 Mexican states, you know, Mexico has 32 states, the age of sexual consent for women is 12 years old. That means in those 19 states, if a girl's 12 years old or above and gets pregnant, it's not a crime for the male perpetrator as long as she consented. So you have Latins crossing the border to the states with that kind of culture, following age-old norms and traditions from the homeland. Now, according to a United Nations map of the age of consent, and no less a source than UNICEF, it says, the only other non-Muslim countries that have an age of consent at 12 are Angola, Mexico, Philippines, and Zimbabwe. Now, for any of you listeners out there who think this is hyperbole, listen to this. It says, Article 261 of the Mexican Federal Criminal Code stipulates, and I'll translate this here, that a sex act not limited to intercourse with someone as young as 12 is legal on the federal level as long as the young person, usually the girl, understands the meaning of the act and isn't forced into it. So yes, the federal age of consent in 19 of the 32 states in Mexico is 12 years old. I like how they mention the Muslim country thing. You know, Muhammad himself, if you've read the Quran, will see that he took a bride when she was 6 years old, though he didn't actually consummate the relationship with her till she was 9. A gentlemanly thing of him to do, right? Go ahead, look it up. Tell me I'm wrong. So is Johnny Muslim bashing here? Well, there's some of that stuff in the Old Testament too, so I'm an equal opportunity religion basher. I know this show is about Latin America, but I do get emails saying, Johnny, what's the Muslim situation like in Latin America? Should we be worried? Now, you've heard me mention in a past show that the entire country of Guatemala, which includes the largest city in Central America, has only 2 mosques. And in my home state, Illinois, which has a similar population, there are over 100 mosques. And get this, it'll seem unbelievable, but it's true. There are over 450,000 Muslims in Illinois. So how many Muslims in Guatemala with a similar population? Only an estimated 1,200. So what's that mean? Well, for every Muslim in Guatemala, there are 400 in Illinois. Does that give you an idea of what the Muslim situation is like down here? At least in Central America? And you know, I've had people ask me, especially lately, what do the regular Latin people think of the Muslims? Well, I can tell you, I've asked a lot of Latin people that question, and they all, to a person, say they have pretty much a genuine dislike, or at least a distrust, of Muslim people. Mostly based on the fact that 98% of Latin America is heavily Christian. In fact, not so long ago at a party, I was talking to a rather intelligent Latin sociology professor who teaches at one of the big universities down here. Yep, a sociology major with a job. Who'da thunk? And he told me straight out that the Muslim culture is incompatible with the Latin culture. And he said if one of his daughters brought a Muslim guy home, well, that just wouldn't happen, he said. He said Latins and Muslims will never mix, and it's easy to prove. Look at the news, every night practically. Look at all the terrorist acts going around in the world. It's always a Muslim strapping explosives to his back, killing Christians in the name of Allah. Isn't it funny, he said, that you never see Catholics or Christians strapping bombs to their backs and killing Muslims in the name of Jesus? So what about all those Muslim and Latin immigration problems? You know, it's all about assimilation. You hear that argument all the time from righteous do-gooders up in the States. Well, we're all immigrants, right? But here's the difference. When my parents or grandparents came over from Germany, sure, their first language was German, but they told their kids they will grow up as Americans. We will speak no German in the house. That was the idea with all the Western European immigration movements to the States. Look, my parents and grandparents did not have German flags around the house and didn't celebrate the Kaiser's birthday or any German events or holidays at all. In fact, I haven't the faintest idea of any single German holiday at all. Yet, you know, down here in Latin America, you see on the nightly news all the time some Latin on-the-street reporter up in my jammy interviewing throngs of people from Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, wherever. They're out on the streets in their Latin barrios up in the States, partying and wearing t-shirts and waving flags from the Latin homeland, singing their Latin country's national anthem, because it's Nicaragua's, Bolivia's, or Peru's Independence Day, or some national holiday back home, Simon Bolivar or Jose Marti's birthday, whatever. So isn't it funny that highly educated Latins that moved to the States, you know, professionals and such, who've arrived with valid visas, totally legal, they're not the ones taking the day off on Cinco de Mayo, sitting in the front yard eating salchichas and chicharrones, waving flags and yelling, Viva Mexico. Nope, educated Latins do their best to assimilate. Sure, they have a feeling for the old homeland, just like people with Italian blood have a feeling for Mother Italy. Bottom line, the more educated, the more assimilated. Oh, and I almost forgot. In the interest of full disclosure, Canada's age of consent is 15, and in the U.S., it's from 16 to 18, depending on the state. Which brings us full circle to Elena's comments about dual citizenship. She says, indeed, there are advantages to having dual citizenship, but is it legal? Well, it's like this. The United States does allow dual citizenship, and some Latin American countries allow dual citizenship too. However, some do not. But let me assure you, it's only a technicality. Say what? Only a technicality? Well, here's how that works. Suppose you set up your homestead in a Latin American country that does not allow dual citizenship. So you had your temporary, then permanent residency, and after 5 years, you decide to go for your nationality and passport. So you're thinking if you're going to do that, you have to renounce your American citizenship and passport, right? Well, kind of, but it's unofficial and non-binding. The day you go to court in your Latin country and take the oath of allegiance, you'll be asked by the judge to renounce your other citizenships before they grant you nationality. You just put your hand up and say yes. That's it. That's the end. So all you're doing is giving them your word. You're renouncing orally. Meanwhile, according to U.S. law, you've not renounced your citizenship at all, no matter how many times you say you do in a foreign court. Now, for you listeners who have renounced your U.S. citizenship, you know it's quite a lengthy and formal process. You have to fill out forms, have your taxes reviewed, make an appointment for an exit interview at a U.S. embassy, pay exit taxes and penalties, then go in front of a magistrate and formally renounce your citizenship. And you'll get an official government document to prove it. So, yes, some Latin countries do not allow dual citizenship, which seems like a huge hurdle and obstacle to overcome, except, according to the U.S. government, there's nothing legal about renouncing your citizenship orally in anyone's court anywhere. So, bottom line, if you're looking to pick up dual citizenship in a Latin country that says it doesn't allow dual citizenship, don't let that scare you. Just note it's a routine formality and doesn't really mean anything. And then Elena asks a question I hear from a lot of people. They say, look, if I've got two passports, two legit passports, and I happen to be traveling to different countries, what happens, let's say, if I land in a country on my Mexican passport and I decide to leave on my U.S. passport? What happens then? Well, I'll tell you, that's something you never want to do. You always want to start and end your trip with the same passport. Because, you see, whatever passport you're using will have a date of entry stamp and it'll be in the computers also. And let's suppose, we'll use the same case here, you land on August 1st in Peru on your Mexican passport. Now, suppose you've been there a month or two and you want to fly to Germany now and use your U.S. passport. Not a good idea at all. In fact, you'll never make it out of that country. They won't let you through the airport because the U.S. passport you're about to use doesn't have an entry stamp for Peru. And the officials there will think you're in Peru illegally. Unless, of course, you whip out the Mexican passport that has the entrance stamp. Even so, they'll only let you leave the country on that same passport, the Mexican one. They're looking for that entrance and exit stamp that proves the amount of days you were in the country. So in the end, that movie James Bond spy stuff doesn't work. You know, where he opens up a secret drawer and he's got 15 passports in there, just picks the one he wants to leave on. That's just an easy cinematic device they use in the movies to move the plot along and keep the action going. In the real world, 007 would never make it on the plane. Instead, he'd surely end up in the first class lounge getting drunk or shagging a flight attendant, which is always part of the plot too. By the way, did you ever see a spy movie where someone pulled out a handful of passports and didn't get on an airplane without a hitch? Only in Hollywood, huh? All right, this show, number 672, is going out on June 30th. That means in just over a week, on July 8th, my expat insider seminar begins. And believe it or not, there's still a couple of people juggling for position to get in right now. So time's getting short, but you can still sign up by going to www.thenewexpat.com and clicking on Johnny's seminar link for full sign-up information. Hey, I've had people sign up for the seminar hours before it began, so there's still time. By the way, if you're thinking about voting with your feet and getting that Plan B underway, but you haven't got started yet, one of the very best ways to get it organized from right where you're sitting up in the States is to sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials video course. Just go to www.expatplanb.com and have a look at my 3 free introductory videos. You got nothing to lose and so much to gain. Check it out. That's www.expatplanb.com. Now, you listeners know you can always do a one-on-one phone or Skype consultation with me. Why? Well, in most cases, people just want to go over their Plan B, straighten out the small stuff and the details, since everyone's Plan B is a little bit different. If you're thinking about doing a call with me, you should download my questionnaire/phone consult form. People tell me all the time there are things listed there they haven't thought about before. So just go to www.thenewexpat.com and download that form. It's free. Oh, and one more thing about multiple passports. You're not picking up extra nationalities so you can travel around on different passports. Like, man, I think I'll use my Argentine passport this time. I haven't used it in a while. Nope, you get an extra passport as a backup, like a spare tire for your car. So, for example, if you had a U.S. and a Honduran passport, you'd surely be traveling on the U.S. passport because you can get into more countries without a visa. But if suddenly the U.S. invaded a few more small countries and picked up a few more enemies, it'd be you traveling on your American passport and the Israeli guy sitting next to you who'd get chucked off the plane first. So you'll get advanced warning where it's dangerous for Americans to go, and you'll be traveling on your Honduran passport then. Oh, and here's another way a second passport could be a get-out-of-jail-free card. Suppose you have a U.S. and a Panama passport. You're in Panama, or anywhere in Central America. Suddenly, you're at the airport trying to fly out, and you find out the U.S. government has put a block on your passport. Could be a lot of reasons for that. You owe more than $50,000 in back taxes. You're behind on your alimony or child support. Or maybe you have too many guns and ready-to-eat meals in your basement. Have you been tweeting nasty things about Ovamed or the DNC lately? These days, the U.S. government can block your passport on a whim. So now you're stuck, right? You're at the airport and your passport's been blocked. In that case, you'd be looking at a deportation order to the States, but not if you held a second Panamanian passport, or any other passport for that matter. Sure, once you got to the airport and figured it all out, you'd probably be stuck there for a couple hours explaining it to authorities, but as long as you've got another passport, you're not a stateless person and can't be deported. Just use the other passport and you're on your way.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.